The views expressed on this program.
Well, good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, the next hour, the 2 hours, are going to be the views of Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's a retired neurosurgeon who spends full time researching the medical literature. And this evening we're going to be talking about vaccines. In fact, there's a wonderful new book out written by Neil Miller, and we do carry Neil's earlier books, very short little books, but this is really a very large book going into the background of vaccines. And certainly as a practicing physician, I marveled at the wonderful things vaccines had done. As an orthopedic surgeon, I had been reared in the latter part of the era of polio, and certainly the horrible deformity and crippling effect of polio that I saw when I was in my training, and then in medical practice, I just didn't see polio. Vaccines had done a wonderful job. That certainly removed the threat of polio. But, of course, along with that, why we'd infected our entire population with the cancer-producing virus, the simian virus 40. So are vaccines safe and effective? Now, when they carry a cancer-producing virus that has killed probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Americans, and how many other people throughout the world unsuspecting took the polio vaccine. And, of course, they and their children were freed of the threat of polio, but what about the cancer-producing virus that they received at the same time? Well, there's so much about the vaccine issue that we need to talk about, and Dr. Blaylock is certainly writing the foreword to this book on vaccines, and he's read it, and we wanted to talk about it tonight. Russell, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Stan. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm just going to let you pick up with the ball and run with it, because there's so much to cover here. And are vaccines safe and effective?
Well, I think the introduction to vaccines was right on target. All of us, as we went through medical school and medical training, were convinced that vaccines played the most important part in reducing one of the number one killers in the 19th century and the early 20th century, and that was infection, the leading cause of death, particularly in children. And we gradually saw these diseases lose their place as the number one killer. We were all taught that, well, that was due to the mass vaccination programs. But what Neil Miller showed in one of his earlier books was that, in fact, the death rate from virtually all of the childhood diseases, including polio, had fallen dramatically before any of the vaccine programs were ever started. So we saw as much as a 92% reduction in some of these death rates, for instance, with measles, and 75-80% declines in death rates before these vaccine programs were started. What happened is, historically, the people who promoted the vaccines took credit for it. They knew that people wouldn't look back in the history, and so they just assumed the disappearance was due to the vaccines. But what the research has shown is that probably the number one reason for the fall in these death rates was better nutrition and better sanitation. They recognized the connection between poor sanitation and these epidemics. So as they begin to clean things up, clean up the sewers and the contamination in households, these death rates fell dramatically. And as we had the introduction of refrigeration and transport of more nutritious foods into the cities where most of these epidemics start, we saw again a dramatic fall in these diseases. Today, we still see the same thing in third world countries.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock. Go ahead, Russell.
So I got interested in quite a few of the vaccines because I was doing some work in the relationship between vaccination and brain inflammation and its connection to neurodevelopmental problems. So things like autism and autism spectrum disorders, the ADHD and ADD. And what I found, there was a very strong relationship that we know when you vaccinate someone, it activates the brain's immune system, produces a temporary state of inflammation in the brain that destroys brain cells and brain connections. The intensity of that activation determines whether you have a devastating complication from the vaccine or just mild 1 or 2 days of fever and feel like you have the flu. But what we're finding is because of the dramatic increase in the numbers of vaccines that are given, as many as 35, 36 before a child starts school, and they're getting as many as 9 vaccines at a single office visit, that this produces such a massive activation of these brain pathways, we're seeing this dramatic rise in developmental brain disorders in children and sudden death, the sudden infant death. And, with careful evaluation of the literature, I'm absolutely convinced the leading cause of SIDS death is vaccines. In fact, one study showed that 70% of all SIDS deaths follow within 3 weeks of the pertussis vaccine. We know it's associated with the hepatitis B vaccine and quite a few of the other vaccines. And we know the mechanism by which it occurs. These brain respiratory centers are damaged by this temporary brain inflammation, and the weaker infants will stop breathing and undergo this sudden infant death syndrome. It's a fairly straightforward mechanism. Well, we know this. And as I got deeper into this, I read several books on polio. I lived through the polio era. I remember 1952, of course, was the greatest number of polio cases during the whole epidemic period. I recall the fear we had at the time. But out of all my classes, school, I only knew one child who developed polio, paralytic polio, and it was just affected one calf and her leg. It per population at the peak of the epidemic was 37 cases of paralysis per 100,000 population.
Hold that over. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is simply saying that in his studies he finds that whenever you vaccinate one, specifically a child, you get a temporary inflammation of the brain. Where, of course, there is an inflammatory response there, and this, of course, can be related to certainly some of the autism spectrum disorders, ADD, ADHD, and perhaps even to autism itself. And the other thing is that, of course, there seems to be a definite relationship to the sudden infant death syndrome, SID syndrome, and, of course, a significant number of SID cases came shortly after the pertussis immunizations. And this is what the scientific literature says, but, of course, their vaccines are a sacred cow, and doctors are not allowed to criticize them. In fact, most doctors really honestly believe that vaccines are safe and effective, and that any criticism of vaccines certainly is unwarranted, because, after all, when they give a shot and that child suddenly becomes autistic, they would never want to admit that what they had done to that child would hurt it, and I don't think most doctors would ever want to hurt a child, but unfortunately some of what is being done today in the name of preventive medicine is destroying large numbers of our children. But please pick up the story there, Russell.
And in fact, this problem has gotten so bad, one out of 65 male children now are the victim of autism. One out of 65 male children.
Now, they use the figure of one in 150 children, but since it's predominantly boys rather than girls, why, of course, that's how it gets to right. 1 in 65 the male children, right?
Which, if any disorder had reached those numbers, 1 in 65, we would declare it a national emergency. Yet we have overwhelming amounts of scientific evidence that our vaccine policy is most likely the cause of this disorder. And I just finished writing two very long, extensive papers for peer-reviewed journals in which I describe the mechanism by which the vaccines is producing this effect. So there's good, hard science behind this. This is not a mystery. We know this. The problem is that there's so much money being made by the vaccine companies. The promotion is so strong. The people in the leadership positions of the medical boards that are instructing fellow physicians to give these vaccines are receiving monies from the vaccine manufacturers. And unfortunately, as you stated, most practicing physicians are not aware of that. They trust these people. They think they're being told the truth, as I did, 10 or 15 years ago. I thought vaccines were perfectly fine. I knew there were complications. But until I really delved into it and looked up a lot of this literature, I didn't realize the extent to which we're being lied to. And just to take the polio vaccine, I just finished reading a really interesting book. It's called Polio, an American Story by David Oshinsky, who won the Pulitzer Prize 2006 for history. And it's the history of the development of the polio vaccines and what they call the defeat of polio. The interesting thing about it is in 1916, polio was an extremely rare disease. And we knew that 95% of people who contracted the virus fully recovered, never even had a moment's paralysis at all. They just had a little fever, a little GI upset, and a little headache. Only 5% of them developed mild illness, that is, felt like they had something of the severity of a flu, and only 1 out of 1,000 developed any paralysis at all. So here was a disease that was very rare. It rarely caused any serious problem when a child became infected. But suddenly it became the center of attention. And in reading this book, what we see is that what called attention to this was the infection of Franklin Roosevelt. He was very an unusual case. He developed polio at age 39, I believe. And there's some question of whether he even had polio. It sounds more like a transverse myelitis to me. But supposedly he developed polio, so he took a big interest in it, and he interested people in the growing public relations field to promote it. He bought this rehabilitation center in Warm Springs, Georgia, and it was losing money, and he knew he needed donations, so he went to this PR firm and told them, we need to have an infantile paralysis foundation and publicly promote this to build this foundation, because he thought he was going to cure himself in Warm Springs, Georgia, at this resort. And that's how this all got started. And once the infantile paralysis foundation began to turn the money and call attention to the public, people began to pay attention to it, even though it was very rare to have a case of paralysis at that time. But what they noticed is that suddenly the whole character of polio began to change. From a very rare disease that rarely caused any permanent problems, it suddenly began to cause a lot of paralysis. Well, what Neil Miller did, he looked through some of the literature and found out that in the 1940s, with the introduction of the DPT vaccine, the diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus vaccine, suddenly polio changed its character. It became a disease that more often produced paralysis, and the number of cases increased dramatically. This was confirmed in a 1992 study, showing again that people who received the DPT vaccine were much more likely to develop the paralytic form of polio. So what we see repeatedly, even today, is that vaccination can make you more susceptible to other diseases that may be much worse. And this is the danger of getting ridiculous vaccines like chickenpox. The chickenpox virus is a very mild disease, rarely causes any serious disorder in people. But once they instituted it, suddenly we saw children developing serious diseases like shingles. We saw the number of cases of shingles in adults suddenly going up, which in an elderly person can be fatal. In an immunocompromised person, catching this virus from the vaccinated child can be fatal. Small babies exposed to the vaccine-induced chickenpox can be fatal. So here again we have, like the polio and the DPT vaccination, this mass inoculation has produced a disease that may be worse or is worse than the disease for which the vaccine was designed. Now, not only was the polio changing its character because of the DPT vaccine, but then this helped the PR call for more attention to this disease, this, what they called a crippler of children. And those of us who lived through that period remember that it was on every movie screen and every newspaper, posters. When you went to the store, there was a card set up where you put your dimes in for the March of Dimes, and the ladies were marching in the streets collecting money. The movie theaters, they would stop the movie and someone would come through and make a little speech and collect money for the March of Dimes. It became a big operation. And as he shows in this book, during this period, the funding of polio far outstripped funding for every other disease, yet it had far fewer cases. For instance, he shows that in 1954, the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis collected $66.9 million, and there were only 100,000 cases of polio. The National Tuberculosis Association, and this is the time when tuberculosis was a major problem in the United States, collected only $24.7 million, and they had over 1,200,000 cases of tuberculosis. When we get down to things like muscular dystrophy, which is we think of as a rare disease, they only collected $3.9 million, and there were twice as many cases as of muscular dystrophy as polio. There were 200,000 cases. So we see that the PR was collecting a lot of money, and it became a very important disease. And we found that the other vaccines were making it a more virulent disease, and that it was changing it so that there were a lot more children paralyzed as a result of the other mass inoculation. This is rarely discussed. Yet we're seeing it more and more in the medical literature, where one mass inoculation, for instance, measles or mumps, rubella, changes the character of these infections so they become more deadly. For instance, there were about 0.5 percent children less than a year of age infected with measles. But after measles inoculation, it went up to 30%. Well, that's the age at which children are most likely to die from measles, so that before the inoculation was done, it was an extremely rare disease in that age group, 0.5%. And that's because mothers had natural immunity. They passed it through the placenta to the baby, and they were protected for 15 months until the baby was stronger. And we also saw that measles shifted to the older age groups, where there were more complications. And so in the case of the measles vaccine, we produced a worse problem than we started with. And we're repeatedly seeing this through these mass inoculations, and we're giving so many inoculations now, the problem is becoming quite acute.
And, of course, the problem is that every time you vaccinate, you get the temporary inflammation of the brain, and you just keep vaccinating, you just continue having inflammation of the brain. And nobody ever mentions this.
Right, and it shows that the inflammation continues for 2 years.
Right. Go right ahead.
Well, getting back to the polio situation, there was this race to produce a vaccine.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Virus, and they continued giving it because they didn't want to alarm the people. And the difficulty was that they have specifically withheld that information from the American people. In fact, people throughout the world, because we spread cancer all throughout the world with a polio vaccine. And now we see people dying of these various types of cancer, and they have the simian virus 40 in them, and of course they insist, well, just because the simian virus 40 is in the cancer, this terrible cancer, doesn't mean that it caused the cancer. Well, simian virus cancer, the simian virus 40, which is a cancer-producing virus, produces cancer in almost every other animal. And yet they deny that it produces cancer in human beings, because think of the implications. If we see an explosion of cancer in America and a great deal of increase in incidence of cancer since the polio vaccination, but you will never hear this mentioned, you know, in the media. Ordinarily, this is totally suppressed. Once in a while, the story will come out, and then it'll immediately be attacked by the NIH and by the CDC and by competent doctors who will assure there's nothing to worry about, why we would never give you a cancer-producing virus. Go ahead.
Well, you know, the results go far beyond just inducing cancer with the SV40 virus in a number of animal species. Michelle Carboni, who's a virologist, a molecular biologist, proved beyond any doubt using PCR typing that, in fact, it is actually causing the cancer, and he showed the molecular mechanism by which it does it. And what SV40 does is it binds what's called the P53 gene. This is a suicide gene that your body uses to kill off cancer cells, so that when a cell is becoming a cancer, it activates that gene and it kills the cancer cell before it can grow. Well, SV40 paralyzes that protective system so that it doesn't work. And if a cancer is caused by SV40 and you use chemotherapy, it actually makes the cancer grow much faster and become infinitely more malignant. So the presence of this virus has produced a major problem in the cancer field, in that traditional treatments not only do not work, but the traditional treatments make the cancer much more aggressive and less likely to be cured, more likely to have a bad outcome. Now, when they looked at different tumors and to see the rate, they found that bone cancers, osteosarcomas, increased 17% in people who had been exposed to the SV40 and the polio vaccine. Brain cancers increased 20%. Mesothelioma, which you normally think is caused by asbestos, actually increased 178%. And they found in another study that brain tumor rates were 10 times higher in states that had the greatest exposure to the SV40 virus. And another study of 59,000 women found that the children of these mothers who had received the Salk vaccine between 1959 and 1965 had a brain tumor rate that was 13-fold higher than normal.
13 times, not 13%.
Right, 13 times. So the connections between this viral contamination has been proven both in human studies, examination of the tumor using modern molecular biological methods to prove it's actually inducing the cancer and not just happen to be there. And so knowing, as you said, that if the public found out that 100 million people had been infected with this virus, there would be a tremendous outcry and a lack of faith in vaccines. Now the question people have in their mind, well, what about vaccines today? Are they safe? Well, I did a study and found out that, in fact, most of the vaccines out there that are being given are contaminated with a number of viruses, pestivirus, cytomegalovirus, all sorts of viral fragments. These things have been proven and are in published peer-reviewed journals and virology journals. So we know that a vast number of the vaccines that are out there are contaminated with things we know cause human disease and can form what we call chimeras, that is, they bind their DNA with other viruses and produce whole new diseases.
Well, we're going to be back in just a moment here with Dr. Russell Blaylock. These are the things you're not going to hear about, and probably your doctor doesn't even know, but the documentation is all there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Dr. Russ Blaylock. Russ, go right ahead.
You know, the other thing about this SV40 infection with this carcinogenic virus that a lot of people don't understand is what we call a vertical transmission of a virus. And what that means is, for instance, say someone that was born in the 1940s or 50s during this period of inoculation with the contaminated virus vaccine, if they have the SV40 virus in their body, it will be transferred to their offspring. And so each generation thereafter will be infected with the SV40 virus. It's passed down through the generation.
And not only that, because with blood transfusions, you took a blood transfusion, well, you could get it that way as well.
Yeah, you can get it through blood transfusions, but mainly, you know, the most frightening is that it's being passed down through the generations,
right,
so that your children and your children's and your grandchildren are going to carry this virus. And this is what they're finding. Carboni did some studies on medulloblastoma, a particularly deadly tumor in small children, which I used to operate on a lot of these. He typed the SV40 in about a third of these tumors. He found the virus in these tumors and demonstrated that it was causing the tumor, the medulloblastoma. Well, this was in the 1998-99 period, so he realized, well, they had checked the lots of the modern polio vaccine, and SV40 had been removed about in 1980. And so he said, how could this small child who wasn't even born then have this SV40 virus and realize that it was being vertically transmitted?
From the mother to the child, right?
Right. And so then the question was, well, how do we know this SV40 didn't just come as an epidemic in humans? Well, number one, it's not a human virus. It's a monkey virus. No cases of SV40 had been known until this vaccination program in humans. But the final proof came when Dr. Carboni took some of the SV40 from a brain tumor, and he typed it. You can type it to make sure that it is a particular virus and no other. And he typed this virus, and then he needed to find some polio vaccine from the 1950s. Well, supposedly, all lots of the vaccine had been destroyed, and I think that's rather interesting. But it turned out that there was this elderly general practitioner who lived four or five blocks from his laboratory.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is simply talking about Dr. Carboni. And Dr. Carboni has done really the seminal work on so much of the fact that the simian virus 40, which was in the polio vaccine, produced cancer, and one of the cancers was this dramatic increase in medulloblastomas, this cancer of the brain, very prevalent in children, 13 times increase the incidence of medulloblastomas. And of course, Dr. Carboni was finding these simian virus 40 in these children, but of course these were, you know, in the period 1999. Well, they'd actually taken the virus out of the vaccine in the 1980s. The question then is, how did the child get the simian virus 40? Because if they got the polio vaccine, they couldn't have gotten it from there. They must have gotten it from their mothers. And so Dr. Blaylock was just pointing out that actually what had happened is that Dr. Carboni was trying to track down some of the original polio virus. Everybody said it had all been destroyed, but there was one general practitioner who had been keeping some in his refrigerator for all these years, for many, many decades, going back to the 1950s. And so what happened, Russell?
Well, he got these lots of vaccines from the physician, the 1955 lot of the vaccine, and he typed the SV40 virus from that vaccine to see if it matched the one from this young boy's tumor. Well, it matched perfectly, proving that the child's virus came from that original polio vaccine. And also, another method by which it may be transferred is that all modern polio vaccines are made from the original vaccine lots, type 1, 2, and 3, that Sabin used. So there could be genetic passage of the SV40 binding virus in the modern vaccines as well. It's not detected by usual methods. But most likely it's being transferred vertically through the mother, through her placenta, into the baby through each generation. Which means now we have this problem of every generation from now on is going to be infected with SV40 along that lineage. So it shows the devastating effect government policy and profit-seeking by vaccine companies can have, and that it can be kept from the public, so that the public and the physicians are not aware that this disaster even occurred. Now, how did the government cover this up? Because this did see light of day. Well, what they did is they had a group of epidemiologists, that are people who study large populations, and they studied large populations to see if there was any increase in cancer, in millions of people. They look at 10 million people. And, of course, they came back and said, well, we looked at the populations. We found no increase in cancer, so the SV40 must not be causing cancer. Well, this was such shoddy research. And, of course, it's just kind of an axiom in the scientific world. If you want to hide something, do an epidemiological study. That's the best way to hide it. Well, some of the papers that were presented by these groups were so bad they had 11 molecular biologists, virologists sign a petition to the journal that printed it saying how terrible this study was and that it was a deception. So, there's a fair number of virologists and molecular biologists out there who recognize what they were doing. They were doing fake studies to try to allay the fears of the public. And secretly, and I know this for a fact because of some meetings that this occurred, secretly these people are saying, well, we know this is true. We know that there's contamination. We know that there's seizures being induced and brain damage and language delay and autism. We know that. But the vaccine program is so important, we can't let the public know it. It might endanger the program.
We had a caller. We had Barbara calling from Santa Cruz. If she wants to call back, we'll put her on if she'll call in. But I think that I just wanted you to get that information out. And for the skeptic out there who would like to verify what Dr. Blaylock is saying, there's a wonderful book. It actually was published under the auspices of the National Institute of Health. It's called The Health Century. It's written by Edward Shorter. And, of course, the book tells exactly the story that Dr. Blaylock has put out and admits, of course, when they actually got together and Sabin and the others said, well, we can't let the American people know. We can't let the American people know. It's better off if they just don't know. Why? Because people would begin to question the entire vaccine strategy, that they allowed this thing to happen, that they've obviously killed many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. We have no idea how many are going to die, and not only to date, but in the future. And the medical establishment, and this is the upper echelons of the elite, they're so much smarter than we are, is keeping this secret. But you can check this out, certainly in the book, The Health Century. And you'll have to get it off of Amazon.com. It's out of print, written by Edward Shorter, under the auspices of the National Institute of Health. Edward Shorter was in real trouble after he wrote the book and told the truth. But let's go to Barbara calling from Santa Cruz. We're not going to take other calls, but as long as this is Barbara, who happens to be my wife, why I have to let her on. Hi, Barbara.
Good evening. I just had a question for Dr. Blaylock, and he may actually have answered it for me. But my sister, when she was about 6 years old, and this was in the early 50s, had a polio vaccine, and for about maybe from 4 to 6 days, she could not walk. And she did recover from this and has had essentially no problems since then. But you mentioned that this could be passed on possibly through the genes to the next generation?
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about there is the SV40 virus, yes. Mm-hmm. But as far as the polio, we know that from 1979, every case of polio that occurred in the United States, which is about a dozen cases a year, are due to the vaccine itself.
So the vaccine would actually give you polio.
Right.
Many people got it.
And in Africa, where they started a program of giving this oral live vaccine to millions of Africans, they've had an epidemic of vaccine-induced polio. There's been riots in the street. People refused to take it because they knew that when the children were taking the oral polio vaccine, mothers and fathers were coming down with paralytic polio. Children were dying by the thousands. I read an article written in the WHO journal, the World Health Organization journal, on the fact that now they admit that all the cases of polio in Africa are caused by the vaccine, but they say, we don't know what to do, we can't stop the vaccine program because it's out of hand now. It's a mass epidemic, hundreds of thousands of cases are occurring, all due to the vaccine, not due to a natural occurrence of polio. So it shows the disaster that can occur when there's a union between vaccine companies and the government. And when there's people in government who are getting kickbacks and monetary rewards for making policies that insist everybody get vaccinated with a certain vaccine. It totally ignores the science. And, you know, what the science is now showing is that in a child less than a year of age, no one knows what these vaccines are doing to their immune system. But there's growing evidence that it is producing significant immune abnormalities that last the lifetime of that child. And that we're seeing now a growing trend and a loss of immunity to all diseases in our population, so that children that are getting these mass inoculations no longer can resist disease the way Dr. Stan and I can, and Barbara, because we had natural immunity. I spoke to a biology class, and I teach a biology class, and I told them, I said, they were talking about vaccines, said, oh, well, wouldn't people be dying by the millions with measles and mumps and rubella if we didn't have these vaccines? And I said, well, what you have to realize is that when I grew up, these vaccines didn't exist. There was no measles vaccine or rubella or mumps. I said, we had those infections naturally. And as a result, I have lifelong immunity. When you get vaccinated, your immunity may last 4 or 5 years. And then it falls off. So while most people think they're immunized against these diseases, what the science is showing is no, vaccines don't last very long. And even the boosters last less than a year. So it's a tremendous con job going on, trying to convince the American public that most of you have been successfully immunized for life against all of these diseases. And Dr. Stan will remember this. When we took our tetanus shots as kids, we were told we had lifelong immunity against tetanus. And then when I was in medical school, suddenly they made a discovery, gee, it doesn't even last 10 years.
And so you have to take another booster every 5 to 10 years, something like that.
But the implication was, what this meant was that for 20 to 30 years, the vast majority of the people in the United States did not have protection against tetanus, but there was no epidemic of tetanus. Tetanus had just about disappeared. So it showed that it wasn't the vaccine that was protecting people. It was cleanliness, it was sanitation, it was nutrition. It had nothing to do with the vaccine. We all thought we were protected against tetanus all those years, but we weren't. Our vaccines had run out 10, 20, 30 years before.
Does that answer your question, Barbara?
Essentially, yes. And now, of course, when they want to give you a tetanus booster, they also want to give you a whooping cough along
right.
with that.
Oh, I know.
Oh, exactly. See, and the pertussis doesn't last either. The pertussis vaccine lasts 3 or 4 years and disappears. Then they want to give a booster. They found the booster doesn't last very long. It doesn't last more than a year or 2 years. And so, you know, what they've done, this giving the pertussis vaccine, is, again, shifting it into different age groups. They shifted it into very, very young children that used to be protected, and they're shifting it into older people that used to be protected. So now we have a shift into a more vulnerable population of the pertussis. So the answer is, well, let's make everybody take a booster shot. Let's make younger children take the pertussis vaccine. And, of course, the pertussis vaccine is the vaccine that is most associated with neurological damage, seizures, developmental delays, autism, all kinds of problems with the brain. Hepatitis B is a strong second. It's associated with things like transverse myelitis, where it's almost like cutting your spinal cord in half. You lose all the function below. Guillain-Barré, which is an ascending paralysis, starts in the hands and the legs and goes up until you're completely paralyzed. A significant number of people are permanently paralyzed. Some
right. Anything else, Barbara?
Well, just then essentially that by giving all of these vaccines, we could, you know, essentially be affecting generations to come
right.
with this.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because it's destroying the immune system of this generation, which is going to be passed on to the next generation, and their immune function is going to be even less, and then a virus is going to come in of a significant virulence that is going to wipe out millions. And they're going to blame it on the virus rather than on the fact they have destroyed the immunity of large numbers of people. And that's what's so scary, this insanity of giving hepatitis B vaccination in newborns. It's the most insane thing ever, and if you read the scientific literature, the virologists and molecular biologists, they're just wringing their hands because they don't know what's going to happen to these children.
And the thing is, of course, hepatitis B is not a problem in America. It's a problem in other countries.
Right.
It is not a problem in America. So why are we giving it to children in the nursery? Unless, of course, maybe their mother has hepatitis B, when you might be able to justify it. And it all gets right down to dollars. And, of course, they're able to frighten parents into taking it. Yes, this is a real problem in other countries, not in the United States. Hey, thank you so much for calling, Barb.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Barbara calling from Santa Cruz. We're not going to take any more calls. But before we go on, Dr. Blaylock, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get the Blaylock newsletter. Now, Dr. Blaylock doesn't ask me to mention this, but he's good enough to come on to be on our program. He puts out a monthly newsletter through Newsmax, and we've taken it for a number of years, always filled with fascinating information that people in America need to know. How can people get information on the Blaylock newsletter?
They can go to my website, which is www.russellblaylockmd.com. It's RussellBlaylockMD.com. And they can connect to the newsletter on that. But I have one of the newsletters is on vaccines, which I cover a lot of this in the newsletter. But people just, you know, they're so trusting, and they don't understand these devastating effects of this growing vaccine mania in this country. You know, they want children 6 months to 18 months, to 5 years of age to receive the flu vaccine every year. They want teenagers to receive the flu vaccine every year. Everybody over age 50, everybody with diabetes or a chronic disease, everybody with an immune disorder to take the flu vaccine. you know, this is absolute insanity. At best, you know, the most glowing report of the flu vaccine says it's 50% effective. Most reports say anywhere from 20 to 30% effective because they have to guess at which virus is going to make up the flu virus for that season.
But how many people have you heard and talked to, and I can tell of many, that said, I got the influenza right after I took my flu shot. I took a flu shot, then I got the flu. And, of course, they insist it doesn't happen. And I know that it happens. I've heard that story so many times from people. And, of course, they have to assure us why you couldn't get the flu from our vaccine. Well, of course, do you think they're really going to admit what they're doing to the people? Well, our guest this evening is Dr. Russell Blaylock. And, of course, we're talking about vaccines, and we will be going on here in the next hour. And for those of you who have access to the Internet, of course, it'll be heard live at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, or it'll be archived there. And, of course, we'll be talking a little bit more about some publications on this subject as soon as we get back here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, you go right ahead.
Well, you're mentioning about getting the flu from taking the flu vaccine. Well, you know, their response, well, this is a killed virus vaccine, so there's no way you can get flu from the vaccine. Well, what people experience when they get the vaccine is they're having this intense immune reaction, which is just like having the flu, because that's what the virus does to you. When you have the virus, your body's immune system reacts, and it's the reaction of your immune system which makes you sick. The virus doesn't make you feel sick. And so if you're overreacting to your vaccine, it's exactly like getting the flu. Now, the other thing is it lowers your immunity. And people particularly who have nutritional deficiencies or chronic diseases, the vaccine will further lower their immunity because it taxes the immune cells so that they begin to die off. And we know that makes you more susceptible to the flu, so then when the flu comes along, you will get the flu for months. And what I've heard from a lot of patients, as you have, Dr. Stan, is that they'll get the flu and they just can't get rid of it. It goes on for months and months. These people are having continued persistent viral infections because they have immune deficiency. And the immune deficiency is nutritional. And if you want to prevent the flu, take supplements. You know, take vitamin E, C, selenium, your multi-B vitamins, and your carotenoid vitamins, and it's going to prevent the flu in most people. And if you get it, it's going to be a much milder disease, and you're going to get over it much faster. It has been proven that immune deficiency with aging is a nutritional deficiency. And even a single nutrient deficiency can produce profound immune dysfunction. So taking your vitamins and your minerals boost your immunity to where it was when you were 30 or 40 years of age, so you're less likely to get the flu, and if you get it, you're going to get over it a lot faster, and it's going to affect you less. Each time you get the flu that persists, that lasts for weeks or months, it's doing a lot of damage in your body. It damages the lining of the arteries. And we know there's a connection between atherosclerosis, that produces heart attacks and strokes, and viral infections. 70% of all strokes are related to cytomegalovirus, which is also a virus that contaminated the polio vaccine and still contaminates it. So
I'm going to have to interrupt you there because we're going to have to bring our other stations back on board. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that we are having an all-day conference here on the 28th of October. That's just a little less than 2 weeks here at the Monterey Aptos Seascape Golf Course in Monterey. And if you are coming, we really need to know this week so we can make arrangements. We have to know how many people are going to be there for lunch. We're bringing in the speakers from across the country. But we hope that You come, doors will open at 7:30 in the morning. We'll probably go until 5 or 5:30 in the evening. Should be a great program. So if you'd like to come, remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's October 28th. It's a Sunday, a little less than 2 weeks from now. So I hope you can make it. And please bring your friends. I would like to get a good turnout. We've already got not quite 100 people. We've got about 80 people signed up, and we anticipate a fair number will be signing up again this week. But, of course, we really need to know this week if you're going to be able to come. Then we want to mention, as far as the vaccines are concerned, we have a four-tape set on vaccines. We have a four-tape set on this new Gardasil vaccine for to prevent cervical cancer, for the herpes virus. Then, of course, we have a four-tape set on anthrax, a four-tape set on vaccine A, which was an experimental vaccine they gave to our troops in during the Gulf War. And then, of course, we have an excellent book that's written by Neil Miller. It's a very short little book, but easy to read, simply on vaccines. He also has another book on autism, which we do carry. Those are both available from Radio Liberty. And then Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has put out a book on vaccines. And so if you're interested in learning more about this, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get, of course, a copy of the conversation we're having this evening with Dr. Blaylock, that is also available from Radio Liberty. People need to understand the very, very real danger that they face today from vaccines and that their children face. Now, certainly we do carry a DVD by Dr. Blaylock. It's called Nutrition and Behavior. And it's really one of my favorites because it goes into the very close relationship between proper diet and people who have all sorts of problems, certainly sociological problems, psychological problems, and so nutrition behavior is a very, very important item that we do carry. It's by Dr. Russell Blaylock, and gives you the whole background of the relationship between what you eat and so many people who are taking drugs, people actually in prisons, if you can get their diet straightened out, you can change their criminal activity. It is the most amazing DVD. That's Nutrition and Behavior by Dr. Russell Blaylock. So we do hope many of you out there in the audience will want to get more information. We do have a couple of newsletters at RadioLiberty.com. That's my website, RadioLiberty.com. And it's the June and July 2002 newsletters. You simply go up there, look up the newsletters, June and July 2002, and we give you the background of the vaccines and some of the documentation that we're talking about this evening. But, of course, I'm looking forward to Neil Miller's new book. This is a rather large book that Dr. Blaylock's writing the forward to that will give you so much more information on vaccines. But the book we have is a short little book, and for most people, they're not going to read something that's fairly large, 500 pages. Neil's book that we carry is probably, 80 pages, but it's crammed full of the information you need if you're really concerned about your children and your grandchildren. And then again, the four-tape set on vaccines, the four-tape set on the Gardasil vaccine, this new human papillomavirus vaccine, and then, of course, you should know about the anthrax vaccine. Vaccine A, the experimental vaccine they gave to our troops that, of course, many of them came down with Gulf War illness. So please remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And, well, again, for the second hour, Dr. Russell Blaylock is going to be with us. And before we go ahead, Russell, a doctor had called in and wanted to know what you thought about tetanus shots. And is there ever a time for a tetanus shot? And let me just put forward the hypothetical story of somebody who had been contaminated in a barnyard that was full of manure and other things. It's a deep, dirty wound. And, Chris, would you feel justified in giving a tetanus shot under those circumstances?
No, I wouldn't. Because, you know, I've treated some incredible wounds. I remember one was an Amish family. And the little boy, who was about 6 years old, was run over by a manure spreader. And he had terrible wounds over his body, particularly his head. He had some very deep wounds that, you know, pushed this manure into his wounds. Now, we did not give him a tetanus shot. You know, we weren't using boosters that much back then. And of course, being Amish, they didn't want a tetanus vaccine for the child. So we didn't do it. Now, what it did was cleaned all the wounds with what I used to call brown and bubbly, which is a mixture of hydrogen peroxide and betadine. I found that can sterilize virtually any wound. So we cleaned all of his wounds extensively with copious amounts of this betadine hydrogen peroxide mixture. I've used it on every kind of wound you can imagine, and even used it directly on the brain, and it'll sterilize anything. Now, the tetanus organism is what we call an anaerobic organism. That means it can only survive in the atmosphere without any oxygen. Oxygen kills it immediately, and that's why you use the hydrogen peroxide. So any wound, if you clean it thoroughly with hydrogen peroxide, they're not going to develop tetanus, even if it's contaminated with manure. And, of course, this child was about the worst case of manure-contaminated wounds, extensive wounds, that you'll ever see. He never developed an infection. He certainly never developed tetanus.
Well, because you really, I think the cleaning, as you say, the you know, the cleaning up the wounds. Of course, we used to just simply excise the wounds, clean away any of the debris of tissue, debris all of the potentially contaminated tissue, and then many times even leave the wounds open.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is to use hydrogen peroxide, because hydrogen peroxide instantly kills tetanus.
Right.
It cannot live in the oxygen atmosphere of hydrogen peroxide. So here's a simple household item that you can clean any wound with. When I was a child, we always poured hydrogen peroxide in the wound when we'd step on a nail. Stepping on a nail was supposed to be the cause of tetanus. Well, we used to run around barefooted during the summer. We didn't wear shoes in the summer. And so you're always stepping on a nail or a piece of glass, and it was in the dirt where the dog's mess was, and we used hydrogen peroxide, and none of us got tetanus, and none of us had a tetanus vaccine. So we certainly never had a booster. So I don't see an instance in which tetanus is a danger as long as you use good wound hygiene.
But you got to use good wound hygiene. If you don't, well, of course, that's what you
Absolutely.
Do. Can't. I remember when I was in Africa, you know, we saw tetanus. We always had a couple of cases of tetanus, but certainly the people who had had the wounds, you know, injury, had not been properly cared for medically. That's what we need, is good medical care. Well, Russell picked the story up there.
Well, one of the other things I wanted to talk about was the idea of using live viruses in vaccines. Most doctors think that this is something that's safe and reasonable, and in the early days, back during the days of Sabin and Tom Rivers, you know, Dr. Rivers, who was the leading virologist in the world, and Enders, who won the Nobel Prize for virology, they all considered the fact that what you could do is take a nasty virus, one that caused a serious disease, and you could pass it through serial tissue cultures. In other words, pass it from one tissue culture to another. And what happened is the virus became less and less virulent, that is, less able to cause a disease, until in the end it didn't cause any disease at all. We call this attenuated virus. And that's what they use in vaccines, for instance, in measles. They'll pass it through different cultures until it no longer causes measles. And then you inject this live virus in children or adults to immunize them. Well, what we've discovered in recent years, in the last decade particularly, is that this may not be such a bright idea. And this was even discussed back during the polio development, the vaccine development. One of the discussions they had back in the 50s, among the virologists, was the possibility that once this attenuated polio virus was injected, it could become virulent again and produce full-blown paralytic polio. Well, and that's exactly what we saw. All of these cases, as we said, since 1979 are caused by the vaccine itself, and a high percentage of them end up paralyzed.
Well, isn't that why they eventually gave up using the Sabin vaccine, the live vaccine, right, and went back to the salt?
That's right. Now, getting back to the attenuated virus idea, was this virus that didn't cause disease. Well, what we've discovered is that when you put a virus in someone, an attenuated non-disease-causing virus, it spreads through their body. Sometimes their immune system doesn't kill it all. And so it spreads through the body and becomes what we call a persistent virus. That is, it may reside in your body for a lifetime. But if it remains of low virulence, it doesn't cause you any outward problems. You don't know it's there. But what they found was that because your body's always producing free radicals, and when you get sick from other diseases like diabetes or heart disease or autoimmune diseases, you produce a lot of free radicals. And that when these viruses are bombarded with these free radicals,
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is simply talking about the use of live vaccines. And of course, they attenuate the vaccines, they try to weaken them so that they can give them to you, and you'll get the immune response to the vaccine, to the virus, but the virus won't do any harm. But what Dr. Blaylock is pointing out, that if you have this live virus in you, it's going to be with you many times all the rest of your life. It's been put in by the doctor. It's been put in so that you'll get an immune response, so you won't get the disease. But is it possible that that virus that's in your body, which now initially was put in because it was very weak, could suddenly become more virulent and begin producing disease? Pick up the story there, Russell.
Well, what they discovered is that because your body's producing all these free radicals, it damages the DNA or the RNA of the virus and causes it to change so that it can become mutated and more virulent. And it can even become a whole new virus producing a completely different disease. Well, this was suspected when they noticed that people who had measles vaccination had a higher incidence of inflammatory bowel disease, particularly Crohn's disease, or something like a 5 or 6-fold increase in Crohn's disease in children that had been vaccinated with the measles virus. Now, what they also found is when they did autopsies on people who died of natural causes, non-infectious causes, in their older years, and they looked at their brain and other organs, and what they discovered was that 20% of the brains were infected with live measles virus, and 45% of the organs were infected with live measles virus. So it had been there all their lives. And that these measles viruses were highly mutated, and that in fact they were mutated in different ways in different parts of the body, so that the virus in the brain was different from the virus in the liver or the spleen. So here we have evidence that this is not just theory, but in fact is true.
Now, these people are actually who then got the measles vaccine, is what you're speaking of, or these people who might have gotten measles by the normal means?
Either way, we don't really know. They could have had the measles vaccine, or they could have gotten it naturally. But about 20% had it in the brain, 45% had it in other organs. So the idea is that if you're going to inject millions of children with measles, in other words, you're not going to say, well, only a small percentage are going to come down with measles. We're going to say everybody's going to get the measles because we're going to purposely give it to them as an attenuated virus. That means every child in America gets this virus, and a large percent are going to have persistent viruses all their lives. It's going to mutate and can result in other diseases. This is true of the rubella virus, true of the mumps virus. Any live virus that's injected into the body or ingested can produce persistent virus infection. Now, when we look at Alzheimer's disease, we find that a persistent herpes infection in the brain, there's a very strong correlation with Alzheimer's disease. People who have recurrent mouth ulcers due to the herpes virus, they have a rate of Alzheimer's disease that's about 5 or 6 times higher than people who don't have these recurrent mouth infections. So we know that recurrent persistent viruses in the brain can result in degenerative brain disorders, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, ALS, all kinds of problems. In children, it can cause maldevelopment of the brain, so that the brain doesn't develop properly. How severely you're affected depends on a lot of factors. It depends on your nutrition. It depends on the state of your immune system. And the immune system is extremely complex, so there's a lot of variability there. It depends on your antioxidant systems in your brain and your body. It depends on the presence of other viruses in your body. It depends on the use of other vaccines at critical periods during brain development. So all of these factors can make a difference to where one child is severely affected, another child is moderately affected, and another has only mild consequences from the vaccine. And so that's why not everybody's the same. It's like I said with the sudden infant death syndrome, the SIDS. Children that are born with immature brain stems that control your respiration, if they receive this vaccine, it sets up this inflammatory reaction in the brain stem, and so when they lay on their stomach, they stop breathing. It's a vaccine effect. And the fact that they were born with not fully mature brain stems. Well, if you hadn't vaccinated them, most likely they wouldn't have died. And that's the lesson to be learned. What I'm seeing in this vaccine field is that the people that are making vaccines and promoting vaccines know almost nothing about brain function. And many know very little about immune function. There's a story that Neil gives in his book that is really fantastic. A molecular biologist told of attending one of the meetings of the national vaccine groups where they decide which vaccines will be used in children. And one of the people who is on the panel, who makes the decision on these vaccines, approached him and said, "Oh, you teach in a medical school, teach immunology. Could you give me the name of a good immunology book? I need to brush up on it." Now, this is a man that's making decisions for the vaccination of your children, and he admits he doesn't know a lot about immunology. Well, you know, doing this study on how immunization affects the brain, I see that this immune-brain interaction is extremely complex. And there's not a handful of people in the United States that understand this. I'm talking about among scientists. So the vast majority of the public and almost every physician has no earthly idea what I would be talking about, because there's so few that are privy to these studies that are being done to show that over-vaccination can produce devastating effects on the brain, particularly when the brain is under its stage of rapid formation. Because the human, unlike the animal, has brain development that is rather intense for the first 2 years after birth. Most animals, their brain is fully mature at the time they're born. But ours is going on for a good period, and it continues even up to age 26. So if during that first 2 years you're giving 15 or 20 vaccines, and like I said, 9 vaccines at one office visit, you're producing severe damage and disruption of these brains. Well, we're seeing it in our youth. You know, when I was at the biology department, one of the professors told me, he says, now you have to realize these students are not like when you were in college. He said, we have a lot of poor students who are not going to be able to understand a lot of the things you talk about. You have to go slower with these students. In other words, students have been dumbed down, you know, a large percentage of them.
Well, I wonder, have they been dumbed down, or have their brains been damaged by many of the things we're doing to them?
Well, they're dumbed down by the damage to their brain.
Right, right.
Because this crazy vaccine program, it seems to be unending. They keep adding a new vaccine every time you turn around, and it's damaging these children's brain, so they have an inability to think clearly.
You know, really, this is the hardest thing, I think, for the average individual to really be able to accept. Because we know that our students, when they're tested, when they graduate from high school, competitively with students from other societies, other countries, our students are way down at the bottom as far as their ability to compete mentally with these other children. And we'd like to say, well, it's just they've got a poor education. But I agree with you. For some time, I've been firmly convinced that a lot of this inability of our children to compete competitively when they graduate from high school is because we've damaged their brains with what we're doing to them as far as vaccination and, of course, in the contact with mercury and aspartame and certainly fluoride. But go right ahead.
Well, you know, the strong connection there with this immune effect on the brain and what I show in these papers I've written is that what happens when you overstimulate the body's immune system and it turns on the brain's immune system, it activates a cell called the microglia. This is the immune cell of the brain, sort of the whole operating system of the brain's immune function. When it's turned on and activated, it starts secreting excitotoxins, glutamate, quinolinic acid, and this damages the brain cells, particularly developing brain cells, increases the risk of seizures, increases the risk of encephalitis. And when they looked at the brains of children who had autism, from age 2 all the way to age 45, what they discovered was that in every brain, the microglia was under a state of intense activation. This is a recent study reported in the Archives of Neurology, a very prestigious neurology journal. In every brain, the microglia was highly activated. And so what you're seeing is that there's a strong connection between excitotoxicity and brain immune overactivation. Well, when you're eating a diet that has a lot of glutamate in it, it makes the reaction even worse because the glutamate itself in the diet can activate microglia. So there's a compounding effect there.
Now, is that the MSG, or what are you speaking of specifically?
MSG, hydrolyzed protein, soy protein extract, natural flavoring, autolyzed yeast, caseinate, all of these things in foods as food additives have high glutamate levels, and they produce this excitotoxic reaction in the brain.
All right, you hold on. We'll be back in just a moment. Our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about, of course, damaging the brains of our children. And, of course, Dr. Blaylock reads all of these scientific journals, and he can understand a lot of the things. The average doctor doesn't have time. And that, of course, why we're in so much trouble today, is we're certainly not getting the truth from organized medicine. Russell, go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, so we have this intense reaction aggravated by the diet as well, and so I'm not surprised that such large numbers of our young people are having serious problems with thinking and learning and language function. I was surprised when I first saw young people coming into my office, and they would very seriously ask them or say to me, "I think I have Alzheimer's disease." And I say, "Well, you know, you're 18, 19 years old, 20 years old. How could you have Alzheimer's disease?" And they say, "Well, I just can't remember very well. I have a lot of problems with my memory." And I was thinking back to when I was a young man, when I was in college or high school, none of us complained of having trouble remembering. You know, when I was in college, I could remember reams of stuff, all kinds of complex organic chemical formulas and biochemistry, and you never complained of your memory. But so many people are coming in young saying, you know, "I have trouble thinking. I can't think clearly." They don't seem to have ability to conceptualize. Visual imagery is a problem with them. So all the things we use to be very creative, they're having problems with at a very early age. And a recent study has shown that the number of neurological diseases, particularly those affecting ability to think, was previously underestimated, that they're growing by leaps and bounds. And they're occurring at a much earlier age than they were before. We're seeing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's at a much earlier age than we used to. All of these diseases are moving down into the younger age group. And many of the diseases that even make these brain diseases worse, like metabolic syndrome, diabetes, asthma, they're increasing as vaccination increases. The studies down in New Zealand showed that there was a strong correlation between introduction of vaccines like the pertussis vaccine and the hepatitis B vaccine and type 1 diabetes in children. A tremendous increase in the rates of these diseases. That asthma increased astronomically in the vaccinated children as opposed to non-vaccinated children. And most physicians recognize that asthma has just exploded. You know, so many children have asthma now. And used to be, as you remember, asthma was not a fatal disease of childhood. It was rare that a child died from an asthma attack. Well, it's fairly common now. So it's a much worse disease than it ever was before. So we have more children with asthma and more children dying with asthma. And there's quite a bit of research showing a strong connection between some of the vaccines and the incidence of asthma in children. And no one's telling the parents this. You know, when you do a surgical procedure, you do any kind of procedure on a patient, you're supposed to give informed consent. You're supposed to say, okay, this is the dangers, this is the drawbacks, these are the side effects of this procedure. Well, that's not being done with vaccines. No one's sitting down with these parents and say, well, you know, there's a 1 in 600 chance that your child will have a seizure if they get this one vaccine. If we give multiple vaccines, it's even a higher risk of your child having a seizure. There's a danger that your child's going to develop autism, and it could be quite substantial. There's a danger your child could lose their vision.
Hold that. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Russell Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is simply talking about the fact that once they started giving vaccines, pertussis vaccine, hepatitis B vaccine, they noticed in New Zealand a marked increase in autism and type 1 diabetes, and we're seeing so many diseases in children we didn't see before. We didn't see type 1 diabetes. It was very, very rare. And now it's, of course, increasing. In fact, sometimes we'll even see type 2 diabetes in very young people. Never really heard before. But the explosion of asthma and the seriousness of the asthma and the increase in autoimmune disease in our children. And then, of course, the explosion of autism and of course, autism spectrum diseases. Since we've had widespread use of vaccinations and, of course, we're told, oh, there's no relationship at all. Why, the experts will guarantee. And yet, of course, there's many, many studies that show a definite correlation but they do not want the American people to know, because if they knew, you wouldn't trust what your doctor is telling you. Go ahead, Russell.
Well, and also, most likely you wouldn't have your children vaccinated. Now, the other thing you have to look at, you know, they say, well, the benefits far exceed the possibilities of these reactions. Well, that's not exactly true, because there's quite a few reactions that aren't absolutely devastating, but they severely affect the future of that child, ability to learn, their health, their risk of developing these autoimmune diseases, diabetes, asthma, all these things are at increased risk in your child. So that's a major consideration. But then we have to say, well, you said that the benefit far outweighs it. And if you say, well, doctor, what is the risk of my child developing diphtheria? Well, if you look at the Center for Disease Control site, you'll see that the number of cases of diphtheria in the United States vary between 0 and 5 cases. Most of those are immigrants into the country, many illegal immigrants. So diphtheria is an extremely, extremely rare disease. Not just here, but just about everywhere. And so it's not due to vaccination that's protected, because, as I've said, the vast majority of people my age who had diphtheria vaccinations as a child, their vaccine ran out 40 years ago, and so I've gone 40 years without an epidemic of diphtheria and without dying of diphtheria myself. So that is a fallacious argument. Well, what about tetanus? Well, we've gone through tetanus. There's no real risk of tetanus if you clean the wound properly. What about pertussis? Well, if we've shown that the vaccine actually has pushed the pertussis into a more vulnerable age group, that used to be a lot of people developed pertussis infection, developed lifelong immunities, and really got through it. With, you know, I had pertussis as a child, along with every other infection, childhood disease. That was natural for all of us. You know, most of these things we're being vaccinated for are really not a danger, like chickenpox. That's not a danger. And if you look on the CDC site, is the indication of the chickenpox, it's not for the child's health. It's just so that mother will not miss time from work taking care of her sick child at home for a few days. That's the pure indication that you're going to risk this child's neurological health and health risk of asthma and diabetes because you don't want mom to miss a few days from work. That's ludicrous. That's not public health. There's no indication there. And most of my friends that are infectious disease doctors just laugh at the idea of a chickenpox vaccine. They say it's absurd. Chickenpox is a very mild disease. Well, measles, the death rate from measles had just about disappeared in the United States before the immunization program. The kids who every so often a measles outbreak will occur in a city and several children will die. And when we look at those cases, almost all those children have been fully vaccinated. So the vaccine's not giving the protection they claim. And it's in children who have other diseases, immune diseases, leukemia, Hodgkin's disease or whatever, and so they have poor immunity, and that's why they die when the measles comes through. And the vaccine wouldn't have helped them one way or the other. So we vaccinate all of the United States with this dangerous vaccine in an effort to prevent a disease that's not really a danger to our children in the first place.
Well, of course, the thing is that there is so much misinformation and frank disinformation out there, and the average doctor said he's going to tell you that vaccines are reliable and safe. They're effective and safe, and of course, it really isn't true. And of course, if you really do the studying on this, this is why I suggest Neil Miller's books. We suggest Dr. Sharon Tenpenny's books, and certainly if you have a chance to get hold of Russell's articles on vaccines, you'll find them fascinating. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guest, Russell Blaylock. Go ahead, Russell.
What you're saying in the final argument here is the benefits don't outweigh the risk because there's very few benefits from many of these vaccines. And parents are just dragging their kids to the pediatrician and letting them inject them with these vaccines. And there's no real benefit to our community. It's all been a sham. Parents just aren't aware of that, and they're not aware of the complications. And they should make their pediatrician sit down and say, I want to know the complication of every one of these vaccines. And no parent should allow their child to receive more than one vaccine at a time. So you go to an office visit, if you're determined to have your child vaccinated, say, I only want one vaccine at a time, separated by 6 months. That would give you the greatest amount of safety because it allows the brain inflammation to cool down before the next vaccine takes place. And when you make a vaccine, in order to get a real powerful immune response, they add different chemicals to the vaccine called immune adjuvants. They're boosters of immunity. And they'll add things like different gelatin compounds and sometimes squalene and mineral oil and all sorts of compounds that are known to boost immunity, mercury, aluminum. This is what causes your immune system to overreact. Well, you have adjuvants in each vaccine. So if your child comes in and has 9 vaccines, that means they received 9 doses of adjuvant. No one would inject anyone with the amount of adjuvants that exist in 9 vaccines at once. Not even an adult could you get any vaccine expert to say, would you inject that amount of adjuvant in a human being, far less a child? Well, they would have to admit, no, that's too intense of an immune reaction. Yet this is commonly done to children. One of the things that parents notice is when their children come to the pediatrician, they're screaming at the top of their lungs, this high-pitched cry. Well, in neurology, we call this the encephalitic cry because it's due to brain inflammation. They ask their pediatrician, he says, oh, that's just because the shot hurt. It can go on for weeks or months even. It's not because the vaccine hurts. It's because the brain is swollen. That's what produces this intense cry. Now, one way to
hold
help...
Hold that for just a moment. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is simply talking about the child who, after having the vaccine, has a high-pitched cry, and they go home, and they start to yell and scream, and of course, the parent is worried, and they call the doctor, and he said, oh, that's perfectly normal, but Dr. Blaylock is pointing out it is not normal that the child will have a high-pitched scream. That is a reflection of the swelling of the brain. And sometimes after the child has been immunized, especially if they've had several immunizations at the same time, why, of course, that swelling will go on for weeks or even months at a time. And, of course, the child, serious damage being done to the brain. Well, before we go on, I simply wanted to mention that if you do subscribe to the Blaylock newsletter, why, of course, they'll give you the opportunity of actually getting some of the back issues of the letter. There's an opportunity when you join and you get the Blaylock newsletter that you can get the older ones, and so you could then go back and get his articles on vaccines. And then, of course, we carry the book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, written by Dr. Blaylock. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And I think of all the books that we carry in our ministry, I think we, other than my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why the second bestseller we have is Health and Nutrition Secrets. We've had so many people who've gotten it and use it sort of as their Bible because it covers so many different things, but there's a section in there on vaccines, and you need to have that information for yourself, for your children, and for your grandchildren. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and at the end of the program we'll tell you how to get it. But go ahead, Russell. You were talking about, of course, this high-pitched scream, the swelling of the brain that children will get after they have been vaccinated.
Right. One of the things I was going to suggest to parents, if that should happen to you, put a cold compress where the child was vaccinated. And what that does is it helps block that immune reaction. I remember when my youngest son was being vaccinated and he came home screaming like that, and I put a cold compress on the site of the vaccine. He stopped immediately and it, you know, cooled his body temperature down. And, of course, that blocks this immune reaction that's triggering the brain inflammation. He recovered very quickly. But we find that when these children have this encephalitic cry, this high-pitched screaming, a large percentage of them have neurological problems thereafter, either seizures or behavioral problems, learning problems, language problems, etc. Is very common. Now, when the researchers looked at this, they had a conference at they call it Simpsonwood Conference in Georgia, and they had 53 different experts and all the manufacturers, vaccine at 10, and people from the World Health Organization. And at this big conference, they all recognized these things. What they recognized in this huge study they had done was that there was a very high percentage of neurodevelopmental problems in children who receive these vaccines. What that means is the child has difficulty learning, languages and using language, thinking clearly. These things are impaired in these children, and they agreed that it was a statistically significant impairment in children who received the vaccines that were recommended on the vaccine schedule. Yet, they made no recommendations to stop the vaccine program or even reduce the number of vaccines or to spread them out or anything else. They wanted the program to continue as it was because, in essence, as one of the participants says, my duty is to make sure every child in this country is vaccinated no matter what we find in this conference. In other words, if we prove, which they did, that the vaccines cause brain damage, we're still going to vaccinate them because my job is to make sure the vaccine program continues, which is an unbelievable admission. But this is the way these people think. They're so obsessed with this vaccine program that they see that the damaged brains is just collateral damage. I mean, this is just something we have to accept. Well, the numbers have gone so large, when we have 1 in 65 children with full-blown, or male children with full-blown autism, and 1 in 150 children born has autism, we have 10 to 20 times that number that have less severe damage to their brain, but impairs their ability to function. We're going to have a whole generation that's lost. We're going to have far fewer creative people, people that are able to do these miraculous things we've become accustomed to, because we're not going to have this large number of young people to draw from. Most of them are going to be brain impaired, and parents need to wake up and realize you cannot trust your pediatrician because your pediatrician is being deceived. It's not that the pediatrician is evil. He believes this. He's being deceived by people higher up the ladder, the elite, that are telling him that this is safe. This is the thing to do. This prevents epidemics. This is the way to save lives. You need to do this. And what that pediatrician does not realize is that recent studies have even proven that these people on the vaccine recommendation boards, a large percentage of them, in fact, are working for the vaccine companies. There's a clear conflict of interest. Many of them own a lot of stock in vaccine companies, and they're under the influence of the vaccine companies to keep adding vaccines and to ignore these side effects and problems. And when public health and the government gets involved, the problem is compounded enormously, because now they have legislation that's passed that protects the vaccine manufacturers from lawsuits, so that they know they can recommend any vaccine they want to, and they're not going to pay the price for it, at least not on this earth. You know, they'll pay it in the final judgment, and that's our only comfort. But parents need to wake up and say, we've had enough. In most states, you have legal exemptions. That is, you can say for religious reasons or philosophical reasons that you don't want your child vaccinated or not vaccinated with certain vaccines, and the state has to honor those exemptions. So you need to check on the internet the vaccine groups and find out which states, your particular state, what its vaccine law for exemptions are, and take advantage of them. Because your child's future is dependent on this, and what I emphasize to people, once they're vaccinated and once their brain's damaged, it's difficult to change it. You know, you'll get some improvement, but you've produced damage that for a large part is going to be permanent. So you can't take the vaccine back out of them. And that's what, you know, people need to realize. This is serious business.
Well, I wonder why anybody would want to go and have a shot that was manufactured by a company that is sure that no matter what they do, no matter how toxic that shot is, they cannot be sued. Would you take a car to a mechanic who actually, you know, ahead of time had said, well, I wouldn't take care of your car, you know, because it'd be too expensive, something went wrong, you might sue me, so the only reason I will take care of your car is simply if you guarantee that the government guarantees I can't be sued. Well, would you really feel comfortable going to not a mechanic like that, or even to a regular physician? To a surgeon who has said, well, you know, I want a legislation so under no circumstances can I be sued no matter what I do to your child. And that's exactly what the vaccine manufacturers have done. And where is the outcry from the parents? And, of course, they really don't understand what this is all about, that they have no rights in this. And I certainly think that, especially after hearing what Dr. Blaylock has had to say tonight, that many of you would consider whether you... we can really trust the vaccine manufacturers, and I will tell you that we can't. All we need to do is look at the epidemic of asthma in our children. We never saw this before, and you don't see it in children from other countries where they're not getting the vaccines. You never saw the marked increase in autoimmune disease in children, or in the type 1 diabetes. Certainly it was very, very rare. It's not rare at all. There's an epidemic of diabetes. Why? And then, of course, the neurological changes. That's the frightening thing. The autism, the ADD, the ADHD, the autism, related diseases. And, of course, the government says, well, we don't know what's causing them, but we can assure you. We have a group of experts who can tell you there is definitely no relationship to actually the vaccines. And we know they know that isn't true because of the Simpson-Wood study. So you go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, and in fact, even the veterinarians are seeing this. You know, the veterinarians have to give the animals a number of vaccines. Well, there's quite a few articles appearing in the veterinary journals saying that these animals are being damaged by these vaccines. They're seeing autoimmune diseases, asthma, seizures, brain damage, all kind of early death. All kinds of things are occurring in animals who are getting increasing number of vaccines. So it's something that's being confirmed in the veterinary world as well as in human medicine. But the problem is most of our doctors are totally clueless as to what's going on with the vaccine. They're far too trusting of their specialty societies and the experts and the advisory councils that are sending these mandates down that these vaccines need to be taken. And one of the things that the vaccine manufacturers do in the public health is they use scare tactics. As you said with the hepatitis B, hepatitis B is a rare disease in the United States. And when they get challenged, what the proponents do is say, hundreds of thousands of people develop liver cancer and die from hepatitis B. Well, they're talking about underdeveloped countries. They're not talking about the United States because they know that's a lie. They know that no infant, other than the infant is born to a mother infected with hepatitis B, is at risk of developing hepatitis B. They admit that. It's on the Centers for Disease Control site. The reason they ever gave the hepatitis B vaccine to infants at birth was because they concocted an idea, well, we can't find all these people when they're teenagers, when they're any risk at all, so let's just vaccinate them as soon as they're born. That way we'll know everybody in America has been vaccinated. Made no consideration as, well, what will this vaccine do to a newborn baby? Well, we've had seizures and neurological problems and diabetes and asthma occurring in these children, and we have no idea what's going to happen when these children are 20 and 30 years old.
Well, I think the other thing, important thing is that the vaccine is not going to continue to give immunity by the time they get to be sexually active or promiscuous. That's the thing. I mean, we're talking about 15 years down the line,
right.
And of course the vaccine is not going to be effective then.
Well, they've even proven it. They've proven that the vaccine does not last 5 years. So here you gave the vaccine to this baby at birth, damaged its brain, produced all this risk for no benefit, zero benefit. And no one is paying the price for this. No one's going back and say, who made this decision about vaccinating newborns without ever testing to see was it safe for their immune system? Could they even mount an immune response to this vaccine? Is it going to give them any protection when they reach the risk age in their teens or later? No one asked those questions, and no one is held accountable for it, but they should be. These people should be in prison, and they should be serving prison terms for very, very long terms, because they have damaged the health and killed literally tens of thousands of babies and children and people in the United States. Now, they use this same fear nonsense for flu vaccine. They constantly repeat, 36,000 people die from the flu every year. Well, if we did, this would be considered a major epidemic. Other than the great pandemic in 1917, we have hardly any flu epidemics that ever killed 36,000 people, particularly every year. Now, when you look at the statistics on the Center for Disease Control website, we find out, well, actually it's less than 1,000 people die, and most of these people are elderly, frail, infirm, immune-suppressed people with chronic diseases. They're not ordinary, healthy, elderly people, yet the indications say everyone over age 50 should have a flu vaccine. And here you have a vaccine that at best has a 50% chance of having any effect on reducing flu. And we have a vaccine that's associated with the heck of a lot of complication, and as Fudenberg shows in his study, people over age 55 who take the flu vaccine every year for 5 years in a row have a tenfold increase in Alzheimer's disease.
And I think that's so important, that's a tenfold increase. And anybody would like to see the page from Dr. Fudenberg's website, you can give us a call. We'll be glad to send it to you. And, of course, that's a 1,000% increase in Alzheimer's disease. What elderly person in the right mind, if they knew that, if they took five of these shots over three or four shots over a five-year period, that it was going to give them a 1,000% increase in Alzheimer's disease 10 years hence, how many people would actually take these shots? And I would say almost no one would. So they're simply not letting people know. We do actually have that web page from Dr. Fudenberg's that we make available to our listeners. Our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. And then, Russell, certainly the shots that we're giving to our children at, what is it, 2 months of age that they give them it's 6 months of age, then they give them the influenza shot.
Right.
And that's loaded with mercury, isn't it?
Exactly. And then the child is supposed to get two vaccines of the flu vaccine twice to begin with, so there's two doses of thimerosal, the mercury. So here we take the mercury out because we say it's dangerous in childhood vaccines, and then we put it back in and say, oh, when you're 6 months old, needs a flu vaccine every year from then on to age five, and then as a teenager. Well, that's accumulative doses of mercury in the brain. Now, mercury, and I can tell you I've examined and read hundreds of papers on the effect of mercury on the brain. I can tell you the dose that was being injected in children produces severe brain injury. There's no question about it. It triggers excitotoxicity. When you block excitotoxicity, you can block a lot of the effect of mercury. So we know that it produces severe excitotoxic damage to the brain. There's no question about it. And it's absurd to inject six-month-old babies and pregnant women with a vaccine that can do that sort of damage. And when we return from the break, I'll tell you what happens to pregnant women when you vaccinate them.
All right,
they're not being told.
So we want to get into that. But remember, they tell you that they've taken the mercury out of the childhood vaccines. What they don't tell you is that they've left the mercury in vaccines that we give to children, specifically the influenza vaccine, which is recommended they give to every child when they're 6 months of age, and, of course, to the pregnant mothers before they bear their child. Well, Russell, what happens to the mothers or the pregnant women when we give them the influenza vaccine, which has the mercury in it?
Well, it's been known for quite a while that when pregnant women get an infection, a viral infection, that there's a high incidence of the child either developing a psychiatric disorder, even as severe as schizophrenia, or autism. It was assumed it was because the virus was entering the baby's body from the mother. Well, they did some very careful studies in which no virus was used at all, but they just boosted the mother's immune system, and they found that that was what was causing the effect, not the virus itself. And that if you boosted the mother's immune system at midterm of the pregnancy, it produced a high incidence of schizophrenia as the child got older. And if you boosted the immunity toward the end of pregnancy, there was a high incidence of autism. So if you're taking pregnant women and vaccinating them against the flu or chickenpox or measles or mumps or rubella during their pregnancy, you're producing this effect. And you put their children at high risk of developing schizophrenia when they're in their 20s or even as a teenager.
Well, then why would the Centers for Disease Control recommend that physicians give pregnant women, you know, the influenza shots in their first trimester of pregnancy? That doesn't make sense.
Well, it doesn't make sense in light of what we know experimentally, that this is a regular produced phenomenon. You should not overstimulate a pregnant woman's immune system because it can damage the baby's developing brain. And we see this in all of these vaccine cases. The seizures. I've noticed through reading Neil Miller's book that a great number of seizures are being produced in children secondary to a number of vaccines, particularly when you use combined vaccines or multiple vaccines. Inoculations at one sitting. There's a high incidence of seizures, and some of these seizures are not clinically evident as seizures. They present as behavioral problems, outburst of anger, anxiety, panic attacks, insomnia, terrible behavior. And that's because the seizure is deep in the brain, and so it doesn't appear like the usual seizure where you tend to shake your arms and legs and roll your head.
Russell, we're out of time. We could go on, but thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a fascinating evening.
You're my welcome.
Good night.
God
bless you. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our two-hour marathon with Russell, and about once every month we try to get him on, and he always has fascinating information. And I certainly will tell you I've known Russell for probably close to 30 years. He is certainly an honorable person. He's done a great deal of basic research, and we're very fortunate to have him. Now, of course, we do recommend very strongly Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We carry his other two books, Excitotoxins, The Taste It Kills, going into the deleterious effects of glutamate, and aspartame, which is new to sweet. And then his book on natural strategies for cancer patients. If you have cancer and you're going to take routine therapy, what should you be doing to build up your immune system? So that's Health and Nutrition Sequencing can save your life. Excitotoxins, the taste that kills. And natural strategies for cancer patients. And then we carry the DVD, which we mentioned earlier, entitled Nutrition and Behavior. It's a talk that Dr. Blaylock gave, and we think it's important because it will really give you tremendous insight into the relationship between what you eat or what your child eats and how they behave. And if they're getting a lot of food additives and colorings and they're getting aspartame, why, you can almost guarantee your child is going to be hyperactive and you're going to have difficulty controlling them. And they know this, as long as, of course, the aspartame, NutraSweet has terrible toxic effects. Well, we don't want to get off into that. As far as vaccines are concerned, we carry the book by Neil Miller. It's a short little book. It's just on vaccines. We have a four-tape set on vaccines. We think it's important. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on vaccine A, the experimental vaccine they gave to our men over in the first Gulf War. And, of course, so many of these young men became seriously ill and are ill today. And then, of course, on anthrax vaccine. And then on the human papillomavirus, the Gardasil that they're trying to give to our young girls. And, of course, a number of them have died after taking the vaccine. But you're not going to hear about that from the people, the communicasters, who are paid so well not to reveal what's going on to you, but to conceal the truth from the American people. Then, of course, we want to mention once again about the all-day conference we're going to be having. That's going to be on the 28th of October. That's a Sunday. It's just a week from this coming Sunday. We're bringing in outside speakers. Going to be a great lineup. We're going to start at 7:30. I should say the doors will open at 7:30. We'll start probably at 8:30, and they'll go through to about 5:30. If you're going to come, we need to know, because we have to order lunch, and we have to know this week how many people are going to be there. Looks like we're going to have a great crowd. So if you're going to be interested in coming or bringing your friends, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that you'll be able to be there. And of course, if you want to get into the other items or more information on Neil Miller's book on vaccines, if you'd like to get this two-hour talk we've done this evening with Dr. Blaylock, or certainly other information we have on vaccines, certainly you go to our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and pull down my articles, June and July of the year 2002. June and July of the year 2002, and there we give you many of these statistics and show you how the incidence of these diseases had dropped dramatically. And we're talking about tetanus, about measles, we're talking about diphtheria, we're talking about pertussis, had disappeared dramatically before they ever started the vaccines. You need to get the truth about what's going on, ladies and gentlemen, because you're responsible for your health, you're responsible for your child's health, and unfortunately, there's so much information that's being put out today that just is not true. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Why would the people at the highest levels of government lie to you? Well, some people will tell you it's profit, and I'm sure that many of the people have a special relationship with the vaccine companies, but there also is evil in the world. And there are people who hate America. Do you know a better way to destroy a nation than destroy our children? Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.